Right now, it's my pleasure to introduce Derek Nemo with Oxitec, and already we've heard a little bit about some of their work in the panel this morning. And certainly, they're on the forefront of some of the technical, social, as well as regulatory discussions around genetic engineering to control mosquitoes. Derek? One more.
There we go. Fantastic. Thank you. Good afternoon, everybody. It's a pleasure to be here, and I'm very thankful for the organizers to invite me to speak today. So I'm going to talk about genetic engineering to control mosquitoes. Now, Oxitec works on a lot of different insects, but today I'm going to talk to you about a very specific mosquito. And that mosquito is Aedes aegypti. Now, Aedes aegypti originated in Northeast Africa. It was a forest dweller. It lived in what called tree holes, little pools of water in the tree holes, and it fed on primates in the forest there. But it discovered that we could provide an absolutely fantastic life for it in our houses and around our houses, because the females basically evolved to feed almost exclusively on humans. And the reason was is that humans provide a lovely bud meal. You tend to sit outside on your porch or in an evening. Aedes aegypti females can come up, feed off your ankle, you hardly notice it. They go off around your yard. You have loads of breeding sites around your yards. I've seen breeding sites as small as, hang on a minute, I've got it in here somewhere. A bottle top cap, like that, which I'm throwing around. I've seen them breeding in these smaller containers of water. So they have adapted very, very efficiently to living in and around humans. The other trick they've got up their sleeve is that the eggs that they can survive for months without water. They're resistant to desiccation. They can be laid on things like tires, which get chucked in a shipping container, spend a couple of months going around the world. They chuck out the tires the other end. The next rain shower, there you go. You've got Aedes aegypti. And all sorts of things like lucky bamboo. It's great stuff. It grows in your windowsill. That brings over eggs from China very often of Aedes aegypti. So it's spread around the world with us in the past couple of 100 years. And basically, it is virtually everywhere in the world, above and below certain equatorial zones, if you like. And with global warming, it is spreading. So why is it important? Well, it's important because it spreads diseases. And those diseases are things like dengue. This has spread rapidly over the past 100 or so years. There's 100 to 400 million infections every year, 25 to 50,000 deaths from dengue. And it's increased 30 times in the last 50 years, mainly because of the spread of Aedes aegypti and the spread of the disease with it. And it infects all these countries around the world. It also spreads chikungunya. This one originated out of Northeast Africa, spread across the world, and then in 2014, hit the Caribbean, and then it spread all over the Americas. And along came, of course, the one most people have, over 1.2 million cases in the Americas alone. It's not caused too many deaths, but it's a very debilitating disease. And it's spreading fast. In Brazil this year, there was over 130,000 recorded cases of chikungunya. Last year, there was 9,000. It's still spreading, it's still there, it's still a problem. And the one you've probably most heard of is Zika. Now, Zika originated in a forest in Uganda. Funnily enough, a forest called Zika. And it slowly spread across through Asia and across through Northern Australia there. But in 2015, it hit Brazil. And the reason we know it hit Brazil is because before it hit Brazil, everybody thought Zika was a pretty mild disease. 80% of people don't show any symptoms. 20% that do, mild flu-like symptoms, maybe a bit of a rash, nothing much else. Nobody thought much of it. But when it hit Brazil in 2015, there was an explosion of the disease, and it was linked to microcephaly, which is this deformation of babies where they're born with smaller heads. Now, this is the worst end of the spectrum that they found with Zika when it infects pregnant women. there are a myriad or a range that's being discovered now, and new things have been discovered all the time about Zika and its effects on infants. So it's been linked to these serious birth defects, and that obviously made it a greater public health concern. If you don't remove the vector, then what's next? So I've already told you about three different viruses transmitted by Aedes aegypti. I haven't even gone into yellow fever, which has a vaccine for it, but still has outbreaks throughout the year. There's a virus called Myaro, that's found down in Haiti, spread by Aedes aegypti, another virus that's possibly spread by this mosquito. So if you don't get rid of the mosquito, there's a chance of these new viruses being spread all the time. And this is not just a threat to outside of the US, this is a threat to the US as well. And in Miami this year, as predicted by many different groups, there was a Zika outbreak in Palm Beach, Miami Beach, and the Wynwood area. I won't go into details, you can look this all up yourself, but it just shows this disease is here. I don't know whether you know, but there was a dengue outbreak in Hawaii as well this year, 200 cases. And an incredible amount of cases in Puerto Rico, thousands and thousands of cases of Zika. So what are we doing about it? Well, we're not doing nothing. The Florida Keys Mosquito Control District, which is considered one of the best in the world, is spending $1.1 million every year just on treating Aedes aegypti just in Key West, which is 25,000 people. So they're spending $40 around that per head to tackle this mosquito. They've got 4 planes, 3 helicopters, 10 staff dedicated to Key West. They go around knocking door to door. They try to get people to get rid of their breeding sites in their yards, everything. They can only get 30 to 50% control of this mosquito at best. So even the best, or what I consider to be the best in the world, cannot control this mosquito with the best resources in the world. So that's the issue. Current tools are ineffective against this particular mosquito. And that's where I think Oxitec comes in. And so, yes, Oxitec has developed a transgenic mosquito. Let's get that out of the way with first so everybody realizes what it is, if you don't already. And we've developed this OX513A friendly mosquito. And we have put 2 genes into this mosquito. And we know everything about those genes. Everything, where they are, the sequence, when they express, what they express, that it doesn't move when it's in the genome, etc. We know everything about those 2 genes. And the gene, the self-limiting gene, this is the gene that causes the offspring to die. Now, we can switch off that gene when we're rearing the mosquito in the factory in large numbers by adding an antidote into the diet. And that antidote is tetracycline, common antibiotic you can find. We put that into the diet, switches off the gene, we can rear large numbers. Then we release males into the environment, because males don't bite or transmit disease. We release those into the environment. They mate with females, which is basically their one and only job when you release them, is to go and find a female and pass on their genes. They pass on their genes to the female. The offspring inherit the self-limiting gene, and they die. And if you release enough of these males over a long enough period of time, in theory, you can get a crash in the population. But we don't just have that self-limiting gene, we have a fluorescent marker gene. And this is an incredibly useful tool for us in the field. Because what we can do is we can put out traps, which are little pots of water with a paddle inside. And the females in the wild, they come and lay their eggs on that paddle in the water. We can bring those back to the lab and we can hatch them. And we can look at how many are fluorescent and how many are non-fluorescent. And it's a direct measure of how successful our males are being in the field at mating with the wild females. And we can do that week by week in real time. And so if the fluorescence is above 50%, we know we're doing well and we'll be able to achieve control. If it's below 50%, we know we need to release more of our males. And we can do that in real time, week by week, not just to show that we're being successful, but also to be cost effective in our application of our males. Now that's all great in theory, sounds wonderful, But does it work? Yes, it does. It's been very, very successful. I've been involved in every single one of these trials around the world over the past 5-6 years, and in every single trial we have got greater than 90% control of the mosquito population. In one case, greater than 99% control. It's been a huge success in those trials around the world. And all of those trials we've done with independent collaborators. In the Cayman Islands, it was a mosquito research and control unit. In Brazil, it was the University of Sao Paulo and a place called Moscamed, which did medfly research. And in Panama, it's with the Gorgost Institute. And these are all published trials. Well, most of them are published trials that you can look up online, peer-reviewed. But of course, this is a transgenic mosquito. So we've had to do a lot of community engagement around the world. And I think we've been very successful in that, because every survey that we've done and other people have done, you can look on the Florida Keys Mosquito Control District website, they've done their own 5 surveys. Every single one of those surveys showed that 60 to 80% of people were in favor of using this technology. There's just been a referendum down in the Keys looking into whether people would like to use our technology in Monroe County. 31 of the 33 precincts in Monroe County voted in favor of using our technology. So I feel we've been very successful in communicating how the technology works, that it's a useful tool to be able to use against Aedes aegypti. I've done a lot of extensive community engagement down in the Florida Keys. I've been personally heading up that door-to-door, going to town hall meetings, talking to people at fairs, at fetes, at schools, all sorts of things. For 5 years now, I've been doing that. And it's been interesting, it's been challenging at times. If I hear anybody else mention Jurassic Park and Nature Finds a Way, I'm going to scream. And I think we should get Jeff Goldblum to promote the technology, because he's great at it, I tell you. So I think we've done a lot of community engagement, and I feel it's been very successful, not just in the Florida, but in Brazil as well. In Brazil, we recently got where we've been releasing in a particular town there called Piracicaba. 93% of people are in favor of the technology, where they've seen it working. They've seen it working in their own town. So this hasn't exactly been an overnight success. I've been working on this 11 years. And it's been a very comprehensive road to success. So started out in 2002 when we created the strain of Aedes aegypti, inserted these 2 genes. We spent 7 years working in the laboratory, sending the strain around the world to the Pasteur Institute, to UCI Davis up in California, Gainesville here in Florida, So we've had this strain analyzed by many independent laboratories, got the good data back. Then we did a trial in the Cayman Islands, 2009, 2010, very successful. Then started in Brazil, then Panama. Through those trials that we've done, we've then moved forwards in places like Brazil, where we've now got regulatory permission to release anywhere in Brazil. And we're now moving forwards to programmatic use of this technology. So I'd like to say we've gone beyond the trial stage. We are now in programmatic use of this technology, not just in Brazil, but also in the Cayman Islands. Now, to do that, you obviously need to produce a lot of our mosquitoes. And that's one of the other challenges that we've been working hard on over the past few years is, well, how do we get enough of these male mosquitoes cheaply enough to be able to control this mosquito over large areas? So this is a building here, and this shows you a plan of a building. It's basically a warehouse. It's about 5,000 square meters of space, and we have it has the capacity to produce 60 million mosquitoes, male mosquitoes per week, that could potentially cover up to 300 million people in what we call the maintenance phase. So after we've achieved control, we have a lower level of releases, and we can keep control over in an area. We have detailed designs of this facility to be able to produce this almost anywhere in the world. Quickly, within about 6 to 9 months, we can have a facility like this up and running and able to move forwards with releasing these mosquitoes and controlling Aedes aegypti. And this is not just fanciful either. We've got, that's the actual facility there. This is the adults in their pots being readied for release. We have them in here, they get put into a truck, and I'll show you a bit more about the truck and releases in a minute. Here's some more pictures of the factory in Brazil. So we've got these large cages for egg production. We've got these rearing system now for the mosquitoes. Just to say, back in 2010, when we were doing the trial in the Cayman Islands, I mean, me and a team were literally sorting mosquitoes by hand from 7 a.m. in the morning till about 4 p.m. in the evening. It was tough work. But over the past 5-6 years, we have worked hard to develop proper mass rearing tools for this mosquito. And we've been very successful in that. And these systems here show you how successful we've been in developing this mass rearing technology. We've also developed mapping systems so we can map an area, look at the mosquito infestation level from traps, and decide on how many mosquitoes we're going to release where and when. And obviously from the traps we bring back from the field, we can then adjust those releases based on real-time data coming back from the fluorescence score. The mosquito distribution is simple and efficient. Those pots that you saw, we just chuck them into a van like this, and then I think this is probably one of the most innovative uses of something that has been shown today, but we use a Dyson fan, one of the bladeless fans, in the side of the truck, goes through the window, you open the mosquitoes in the fan, they go through it and out through the side of the truck. So you just drive down the road, open the pots, and every 50 meters or 100 meters, you puff the mosquitoes out of the side of the truck. Very effective, very efficient, works very well. We're also looking into obviously area-wide control in terms of aerial release as well and other systems. But what we can have is a regional hub. This is a hub produces the mosquitoes, either as pupae or as adults. Those then get distributed to towns around that hub, and then you can release and control the mosquito in those towns. So hopefully I've shown today that Oxitec has the solution. So we've had years of independent research being done on this technology. It's proven safe and effective in other countries. And I'd like to highlight here that we have been through the regulatory process in the US. We've been going through it for about 5 years now. But on August this year, the FDA, the CDC, and the EPA evaluated an environmental assessment, which evaluated everything from females that are inadvertently released during our release program. Do they have any effects? You know, what if you get bitten by one? Have no effects at all. It's just the same as getting bitten by a wild type. What about the proteins that are expressed in our system, the self-limiting proteins and the marker? Non-toxic, non-allergenic to humans. What about predators that eat our mosquitoes? We've done the predator studies. Nothing affects predators. And so they looked at all that information and the trials we've done elsewhere, and they issued a finding of no significant impact on human health, animal health, or the environment on the 5th of August this year, which basically allows us to go ahead with a trial in the US. And we're working with the Florida Keys Mosquito Control District to move towards that, hopefully early next year. We have confirmed scale-up capabilities and programmatic deployment. We have just started a control program in a town called Piracicaba, and we're treating an area with 65,000 people on it right now. We started about 6-8 weeks ago. In the Cayman Islands, we started about 3 or 4 months ago, treating an area with 5,000 people, and we're going to expand over the whole of the Cayman Islands, which is about 50,000 people, over the next 2 to 3 years. And so Oxitec is preparing for worldwide control of Aedes aegypti using a genetically engineered mosquito. And I hope from the talk today you can see that we are now there, we are now ready, and we are moving forward rapidly to deploy this technology. And thank you very much for listening.
one question.
Take your pick. Okay, for the first question in terms of disease transmission, vectoring of the mosquito itself, the trials that we've done so far have been too small scale to really show any evidence of disease transmission reduction. You have to treat huge areas to show any sort of disease transmission reduction because, you know, dengue can occur 1 year in a high amount, next year nothing, and then again high. So you have to do large areas over a long period of time to show disease reduction. So we are working towards that. But obviously we need to expand to a size whereby we can actually show that. However, we've been treating a Piracicaba in Brazil for the past couple of years. We've been treating an area with 5,000 people in it. And between 2015 and 2016, there was a 91% reduction in the amount of dengue in that area. And we've shown a greater than 90% control of the mosquito as well. That's anecdotal, okay? It's not large enough to show any sort of real statistical data, but it's a good indication that reducing the mosquito will, in fact, lead to a reduction in the dengue transmission. And we're working towards larger trials at the moment. In terms of the second question, please remind me, sorry, what was that?
How are you going to overcome sort of the cultural barriers that people have in Key West and other communities for the application? What's the strategy to get them to adopt the technology with credit?
Yeah, and I've been doing this a lot down in the Florida Keys, and the community engagement is obviously the starting point, and it's a very important starting point to educate people. I think the biggest barriers that I've noticed over the past 5 years has been misinformation and fear. This fear of misinformation over genetically modified anything, really, has been one of the biggest barriers. Not really cultural, although you could call it cultural. It's really been that fear of misinformation that you have to drill through and drill down. And it's very easy for somebody to say something in one sentence, like, we caused the Zika outbreak in Brazil. And that happened. That actually happened. Someone stuck an arrow on Brazil and said, we released here and Zika came in here and we caused the Zika outbreak. I spent months refuting that and getting that, you know, debunked. And there's loads of stories I can mention about those, that sort of misinformation. So I think that has been the biggest challenge for me at the moment and continuing to be. But the referendum we had down in the Keys was a superb result. 31 out of 33 precincts said yes. Around 60% of people were in favor of the technology. It's a brilliant result. So I think the message is getting through.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Derek. And I think for me, it's also interesting to see the timeline. These things don't happen just overnight, but like with the example that Greg Ruiz gave with ballast water, there's an almost decadal process in terms of technology development, evaluation, through to actual implementation on the ground.